change. The rhetoric they speak is all the same. The men behind the curtain and the illusion they create. Pull the puppet strings and seal our fate. Watch yourself around me. I'm trying to live free. Push too far, we will strike. Like a snake coiled up in the night. Watch yourself around me. I'm trying to live free. Push too far, we will strike. Where the power structure lies, fight amongst ourselves as freedom dies. The only hope for humankind lies in solidarity. The strength in our numbers sets us free. Watch yourself around me. I'm trying to live free. Push too far, we will strike.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Liberty folks, and jackbooted thugs alike. We are back here again for the Hour of Power, ladies and gentlemen. It is that time. It is Thursday, October 17th, they tell me. And this is the TNT Radio Show, Thursday Night Truth, on the Matthew Matters Radio Network. And we'll start out tonight, as we always do, with This Week in History. And we'll take a look at our Liberty calendar here. You have to forgive me as I was rushing home from the daytime job to get to do the show. Traffic gets worse and worse. And we celebrate Columbus Day this week. Now, the schools didn't close. The government indoctrination camps didn't shut down for Columbus Day because, you know, he's just an old white guy and his history is not that important. But Columbus Day was this week on Monday. And then we see on Tuesday, we had the anniversary of the first silver dollar coin minted in 1794 on that date on Tuesday, some 219 years ago. And then, sure enough, yesterday, the United States Mint was established 227 years ago. United States Mint established this week in 1786. And finally, if you really want to do some recent history and you want to get into something that nobody's talking about, then go back and look up what happened on this date just 7 years ago today. And you want to look up the writ of habeas corpus being suspended, ladies and gentlemen. People say, what the hell is that? What's the writ of habeas corpus being suspended? Well, again, I know they don't talk about this in the mainstream press. They don't talk about it in the government indoctrination camps called public schools. But the bottom line is if you go back, look at your history just 7 years ago today, I think you'll be in for a little bit of a surprise. I think you'll find out that George W. Bush did the same thing that Abraham Lincoln did, and that was he suspended habeas corpus. 7 years ago today, President Bush, lest we forget him, I know some people put up these banners and say, miss me yet with George W. Bush, and God knows when Barack Hussein Obama is president, it's hard not to miss any former president, even if it's Bill Clinton, for God's sake. But I do want you to remember what happened 7 years ago today. That was President George W. Bush signing a law that suspended the right of habeas corpus to persons determined by the United States to be enemy combatants in the global war on terror. Remember that? Remember that little soap opera, the global war on terror that never ends? And President Bush's action drew severe criticism from some because the law failed to specifically designate who the hell would be and who the hell would determine who would be and would not be an enemy combatant. To President Bush's support for the law, Jonathan Turley, professor of constitutional law at George Washington University, a real president named George W., Jonathan Turley at George W. University stated, "What really a time of shame this is for the American system. What the Congress did and what the president signed today essentially revokes over 200 years of American principles and values." But it was not the first time. In fact, the Military Commissions Act of 2006 was not the first time in the history of the U.S. Constitution that its guaranteed right to writs of habeas corpus had been suspended by an act of President of the United States. Going back to the early days of the war between the states, or the war of northern aggression, or the war of southern independence, or if you really want to call it this, the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln suspended habeas corpus, and both Presidents Bush and Lincoln based their actions on the dangers of war. And both presidents faced sharp criticism for carrying out what many believed to be an attack on the Constitution. In case you're still wondering, what is a writ of habeas corpus? It is a judicially enforceable order issued by a court of law to a prison official ordering that a prisoner be brought to the court so it can be determined whether or not the prisoner had been lawfully imprisoned, and if not, whether he or she should be released from custody. A habeas corpus petition is a petition filed with a court by a person who objects to his own or another's detention or imprisonment. This is when they put you in a cage, ladies and gentlemen. The petition must show that the court ordering the detention or imprisonment made a legal or factual error. The right of habeas corpus is a constitutionally bestowed right of a person to present evidence before a court that he or she has been wrongly imprisoned. The right of writ of habeas corpus are granted in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2 of the United States Constitution, which states, quote, the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. And President Bush on this date in 2006 signed the Military Commissions Act of 2006, which suspended the rights of habeas corpus. The bill basically gave the president almost unanimous, unlimited, unguarded authority in establishing and conducting military commissions to try persons held by the U.S. and considered to be unlawful enemy combatants in the global war on terrorism. In addition, the act suspends the right of unlawful enemy combatants to present or to have presented on their behalf writs of habeas corpus. I know it's a little bit of a history lesson for you tonight, and some folks in their eyes may water over and their eyes may turn and they say, what in the hell is you talking about this for? Well, I'm talking about this because if you go way back in 1862, President Lincoln issued a proclamation suspending the rights nationwide of habeas corpus. And additionally, Lincoln's proclamation specified whose rights would be suspended. He said all persons arrested or who are now or hereafter during the rebellion, see the rebellion is what they called what the South was doing, the war of Northern aggression, the war of Southern independence, the war between the states, if you will, or if you absolutely have to call it what the government indoctrination camps do, the Civil War, even though it wasn't civil, and the Civil War is where two countries or states are fighting over the same capital, and the South had absolutely no desire for Washington, D.C. And see, in 1866, after the end of said war, the Supreme Court officially restored habeas corpus throughout the nation and declared military trials illegal in areas where civilian courts were again able to function. So President Bush did the same thing 7 years ago today that Abraham Lincoln had done 150 years ago. But there were some significant differences and similarities in the circumstances, recalling that the Constitution allows for the suspension of habeas corpus when, quote, cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it, unquote. Consider that both Presidents Bush and Lincoln acted as suspended under the powers granted to them as Commander-in-Chief of the military. Consider that President Lincoln acted in the face of an armed rebellion within the United States, whereas President Bush's action was a response to the global war on terrorism, considered to have been triggered by the September 11th attacks in New York City and the Pentagon. Never mind the fact that the great majority of those people were Saudi Arabians, and we would never go after Saudi Arabia. That's one of our quote-unquote best friends. But President Lincoln's action suspended the habeas corpus rights of the U.S. citizens, and Bush's Commissions Act of 2006 stipulates that the rights should be denied only to, quote, aliens detained by the United States. Certainly the suspension, even if temporary or limited, of any right or freedom granted by the U.S. Constitution is a momentous act that can be carried out only in the face of dire and anticipated circumstances. But whether one or both or neither warranted the suspension of the rights of the writs of habeas corpus remains open for debate. We haven't even given out the phone numbers, but we already see we got a friend on the line, and we'll go to the phone lines. If you want to join them, just call us in at 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. You are listening to the TNT Radio Show on the My View Matters Radio Network. And we'll go straight to the phone lines where I believe our good friend Paul from Stop Invisible Taxes drops by. Hi, Paul.
Good evening, Dale. How's life
How are you,
in
Paul?
The NT world?
It's great, Paul. We were just talking about habeas corpus. What say you?
Well, habeas corpus. I love the habeas corpus as a concept. I hate it when our government decides to concoct, if you will, a scheme to rob us of it. I had a conversation today with one of my political associates, Dale, that we kind of ventured into this Osama bin Laden thing. He's convinced that our military knew and our leaders knew about Osama bin Laden's location for many, many, many years prior to Osama actually being captured. And then he went on to say something that kind of ties in with your habeas corpus concept, and that is, in the interim, between the time that our military intelligence folks knew where Osama bin Laden was and the time that they decided to capture him, there were quite a few new laws implemented ostensibly to, quote, protect us from such evildoers. And he went on to speculate that Osama bin Laden's usefulness came to an end, therefore it was time to go ahead and take him out. But while he was the boogeyman, if you will, our government and military leaders and the power structure crafted all sorts of stuff which certainly threatened the concept of habeas corpus, which I know that most of the listeners in your audience knows why the concept of habeas corpus came about. But for those that didn't, our entire way of justice, our justice system, no matter how bad it is today, it was a whole lot better than what used to be practiced in England. Mm-hmm. In England, you absolutely could be taken into custody for virtually no reason at all, and you may never be seen again. When our country got started, the concept mm-hmm. of habeas corpus was extremely important to the founders. So, anyway, I just want to impress upon everyone that this concept of habeas corpus is a really critical element in our system of justice. Okay?
Well, Paul, I think it's interesting that, of all people, George W. Bush was the one to go out there and suspend it. I have no doubt that if he somehow had gotten through his two terms as president and didn't do it, then I would have suspected that maybe the president, dear leader Obama, would have done it. And I keep thinking about the differences. It seems like a lot of things have changed just in the last decade politically. And we went from a time when George W. Bush was telling us about this boogeyman over in a cave with the flies around his face. And now we go up the past up to today's time, and dear leader Obama's telling us that we are the boogeyman. So I don't know which is worse, when they lie and create a boogeyman to try to tell us how they're going to protect us, or when they look at us and tell us that we're the bad guys. What do you think, Paul?
I don't think it really makes any difference. I think that's a difference without a distinction without a difference, Dale. In order for them to remain in power, they've got to have us distracted, okay?
Yep.
So when foreign boogeymen, if you will, no longer seem to be working particularly well, then they have to create some kind of domestic. So we then become the boogeyman, as you stated. They don't care. They just don't care who the boogeyman is. They don't care.
Well,
so.
The boogeyman to me, more than likely, is not those of us who are footing the bills, but the ones that we pay to foot these bills. And I keep talking about it. You and I talk about it, and Ed talk about it. And that is the only way to get this to change is to vote the SOBs out. And again, I guess where I get really frustrated on a sidebar, when I start to hear people talk about term limits. And term limits are great, but the problem with term limits is if you can't get people to vote out the politicians, how are you going to get the people who are already in office to vote to kick themselves out? They're not going to do it. I mean, do you think term limits is going to be the answer to get us to flush out the Congress?
Well, Dale, I think you know where I am on this, the whole concept of reforming the system as it now stands. I'm not real hopeful about having any substantive reforming happen courtesy of the electoral process. I think it's going to take something well beyond the electoral process in order to make it happen. But
well, this is the main reason I wish people didn't vote as much, Paul. I've said it so many times, and some people will come on the airwaves and, oh, they want to have this big get out the vote. You know, if you're a candidate, I understand if you're working for a bigger candidate, but I don't want people in general to get out and vote unless they're casting informed votes. These people who only vote because they vote for who their union told them to vote for, or who their newspaper told them to vote for, or even who their Kentucky Right to Life tells them to vote for, I don't want them voting. I want them to cast informed votes. And I'm thinking the only way that the ballot box is going to be successful is if people don't vote. But we know that's not going to happen, because even if the voting keeps getting to a lower and lower and dwindling down to a pathetic percentage of people turning out, that just gives more power to the ones who do go out and vote. So are you suggesting that even though we need something like a new kind of revolution, Paul, should the people who support that stop voting altogether?
I don't know that there is an alternative to that in the short term. I think that you still have to keep fighting the fight. You have to fight the good fight. Okay? So, you know, you continue working within the system and get what change you can get. And, you know, I'm in agreement with you as far as remaining optimistic, but the reality is human behavior being what it is, humans are very slow to change things. And this crop of humans in the United States, by and large, are pretty lazy. That's part of the reason why they don't want to get familiar with each individual candidate and where they stand and what their history is. That takes a lot of work.
Well, when it comes to these candidates right now, Paul, these candidates who are in office now, and I've said this many times, and I don't mind repeating it to folks, that there are very few people out there in Congress who I truly can say I like and respect and trust in. There's either three or four U.S. senators, depending on the day, out of 100 that I could put in that category. And if I really, really tried hard, I might be able to come up with six or seven. That's still a single number, folks, six or seven out of 435 in the House of Representatives. So I'm a person who has never written out any checks to political candidates. And, again, I probably still won't, because I think that money is better spent elsewhere. But when you look out there, we got Rand Paul, Mike Lee, and Ted Cruz, and that's about it when it comes to U.S. Senate. There's one guy that I know a lot of people aren't familiar with, and I've researched his record, and it's James Risch up in Idaho. It's like the land far, far away, so people don't think about Idaho. But those are about the only four U.S. senators that I have any respect for out of 100. So I might consider supporting those guys. And you get into Cruz and Rand Paul, both want to run for president, and all that comes up. And as I've told Ed Springsteen, you know, I know he doesn't support Matt Bevin, and I'm not saying that I'm the biggest Matt Bevin cheerleader, but it's very clear that we need to get the Mitch McConnells out. So I think you're right that you have to keep fighting the system from within and from without, but I'm trying to just get people to run for office. And, Paul, I got a big laundry list of offices here that are going to be on the ballot just in our own Commonwealth of Kentucky next year, and I don't hear a lot of people getting excited about running for office. Do you?
No, because the whole process of running for office anymore, since our system seems to be controlled by two political parties, is that the two political parties have got so much influence over the system and the process that it's just not practical for people who are not part of those two parties to decide to run. The old movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, great movie, very idealistic, but it doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't exist. I'm just not hopeful that our current electoral system is functioning particularly well, because it's controlled by basically two special interest groups.
Well, and we know that and when you say the two political parties, I'm sure you really mean the uniparty, the one party, the two sides of the uniparty, and we know they love to throw around money. And we know they love to throw around our money. They don't throw around their own money, of course. And again, it reminds me of what I told Ed last night. I think Benjamin Franklin was very, very correct and very prophetic when he said that, quote, when people find they can vote themselves money, that will herald the end of the republic. And that can look, be looked at two different ways. That can be the people who depend on the government to give them handouts. We saw when Ann Northup was congressman in Louisville, the only way she stayed in office as long as she did was going along with the Democrats on the handouts. Or that could be that could mean the congressmen and senators themselves, because they vote themselves pay raises. So I guess my point is, to bring it back into what we just saw happen, we have this big budget deal, of which I'm not a fan, and Mr. Springsteen and I agree with that. And I know Ed was fit to be tied last night, and I told him, I guess the reason I wasn't getting too hysterical about it is because I wasn't going to go off in a corner and kill myself over what they're doing in government. But the bottom line is, in Washington, we see these big boondoggles of spending plans and these subsidies. And, man, I used to think that we had some doozies in the House when it came to pork barrel spending like Hal Rogers, but look what Mitch McConnell's done. This bill to, quote-unquote, end the shutdown included a $3 billion pork subsidy for the Ohio River Project. Are you familiar with this, Paul?
Yeah, I saw that today, and in fact, I've actually got two different articles written on the Louisville Courier-Journal. Bruggers, who, by the way, is an environmental reporter writing about political stuff, I find kind of fascinating. But Bruggers had in his individual article, and then he had he was a co-author, and the article dealt with the same subject matter, and that's at $2.8 billion. But it came at it from two different angles. The first article that he co-wrote with another guy was attacking Mitch McConnell's selling out for $2.8 billion, I forget what it was, but basically a bribe, okay?
Yep.
A kickback, he called it. He called it a kickback. And then a few minutes later, Bruggers went out on his own, wrote an individual article, and the article was criticizing Rand Paul's office for not responding to this whole thing. They sent him a question, and his office basically said they had no comment, and that was an article? Come on, Dale. That's not a story.
Well, I agree, and if you think McConnell had any shame left, he keeps proving he is shameless. And McConnell today, his handling of this whole fiscal crisis underscores the tricky political position that he finds himself in throughout this fight. They asked him about this debt deal, if it would hurt his chances in a primary against conservative businessman Matt Bevin. McConnell would not comment. He declined, but get this. When he talked about Grimes, you know, he always wants to go after Allison Lundgren and Grimes. He has his hatchet men put out these ads against Bevin while he's supposedly focusing on Grimes. And here's his quote. He said, talking about the budget deal, he said, what happened yesterday completely steps on the whole rationale for her candidacy, which is that somehow I'm part of the dysfunction of Washington. He said, look, I've demonstrated on four occasions, including yesterday, that when a country is in crisis and needs something to be done on a bipartisan basis, I will step forward and get an agreement. What do you think about
Excuse
that?
Excuse me. I have to run and put my face over the toilet after hearing that. I'm about to
That's the way it should be. That's the response you should have. I mean, I've lived in Kentucky my entire life, Paul. I don't know how long you've been in the Commonwealth, but
me too.
I don't.
Me too.
Okay, well, I don't vote my wallet. I vote principle, and I just abhor when representatives that claim they want to financially help their constituents short term, even though it's to the long term detriment, will come out and say this crap. I mean, I don't have a problem with voting against them in the primary, and I realize that already will get me the red stars from the county party and whoever the newest lawyer is that they hired to run the party after, I guess, Shelley May had to switch deck chairs on the Titanic. I'm not going to vote Democrat, but we've got to get people like McConnell out of office now, and I think that's why you need more people like Matt Bevin, Paul.
Well, you know, going back to that particular race, that's a race that just doesn't have a lot of good choices because the Uniparty is essentially controlling the game.
Yep.
Bevin, based on the things that I've heard and that he has failed to refute, Bevin's got some baggage. the Democrat, Grimes. She's got even more baggage.
Oh, she's got a lot of baggage, but she's got the Kentucky machine behind her. I mean, hell, her dad was state chairman. What was his name? Bruce Lundergan?
Jerry
Lundergan, sorry.
Jerry Lundergan,
Democrat hack.
Democrat hack. He got into his own legal trouble over finances as well. So, I mean, her pedigree, it's essentially, it's choosing from the lesser two evils, but as
I mean,
saying,
apparently
those
she's
still
raised
evil.
More money, supposedly, allegedly, she's raised more money in the quarter than Addison Mitchell McConnell Jr. has. But with Bevin, I mean, I will say this in his defense, and I guess I sometimes find myself coming to his defense because I don't like hearing Republicans, not, I know you're not one of those, you're not a Republican, I don't hear Republicans when they attack him saying bad things about Bevin because he doesn't have the money to put out big ads defending himself against McConnell's mudslinging. But again, with McConnell and this budget deal, quote unquote, I mean, don't you think that Mitch McConnell should probably be arrested for prostitution? I mean, isn't he like the biggest whore out there?
That's an interesting analogy.
I mean, but Harry Reid must be desperate for the affection. I mean, the $3 billion would buy every high-class hooker in Vegas and Harry Reid from Nevada. I mean, you think he would spend that money better with his own hometown, homebred hookers than to spend it on McConnell.
Well, Dale, unfortunately, as you alluded to at the top of the show, there's just a handful of people that are in public office today that truly deserve respect and honor because mm-hmm. they're there for all the right reasons. The rest of them, you could put them all on a ship, get it lost out in the South Pacific, and never hear from them again, and we wouldn't be any worse off at all. In fact, we'd probably be a lot better off.
I think you're right, Paul. I think one thing we need to do need to take a break right now if you want to stick with us. It is the bottom of the hour break, folks. You're listening to the Thursday Night Truth Radio Show on the My View Matters Radio Network, and we'll be back after this.
Papa.
Ooh, I learned how to play my guitar. Some people say I'm
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the show where we do think you can handle the truth. I am your host, Dale the Truth, on the Thursday Night Truth radio show on the My View Matters radio network. And we went into break there with a little Lynyrd Skynyrd, Was Our Right or Wrong? And, of course, we opened up the show tonight with one of our favorites, and that was Sons of Liberty. Got to see another one of our favorites this past weekend at the Machine Gun Shoot, and that was Poker Face. If you guys have heard us play their music before, they are very patriotic. And we know that the Machine Gun Shoot was a big success as well. It's getting bigger and bigger every year. I'm not a big fan of crowds, but there are a lot of people out there who get it. There are a lot of people out there who get what this country is supposed to be about and are not in the pocket of the Mitch McConnells. I was just saying, and it sounded like I was being a smartass, which I probably was, when I was talking to our good friend Paul from Stop Invisible Taxes, who had stopped by and talked to us tonight. I said, Mitch McConnell should be arrested for prostitution. How desperate is Harry Reid for affection, as $3 billion could have paid for every high-class hooker in his own state of Nevada, but instead he gave the money to Mitch McConnell for a boondoggle project? And Mitch McConnell stands there and says he can step forward and get an agreement. No, what Mitch McConnell proved is he can step forward and bend over and show that he puts the KY in Kentucky. I mean, Mitch, old boy, it definitely proved that he's part of the dysfunction in the Republican Party. I encourage everybody to go over to mattbevin.com and look and see what Matt Bevin is all about, because we're tired of the old kickbacks. And I don't even like it that it's here in our own state. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of temporary jobs created by this kickback in our state. That doesn't make it constitutional, and that doesn't make it right. That's why Dr. Ron Paul got the nickname of Dr. No, because he voted against all these plans. He voted for the Constitution, but he would vote against these plans when they came up, and they would do stuff that was not constitutional. Now, if you want to talk about not constitutional, we really, really need to get into some of the stuff that they're doing with your tax dollars, because the social programs keep getting bigger and bigger. I keep hearing people say, oh, well, you got to feed the children. Oh, well, you got to have the food stamps. Oh, well, you got to have the welfare programs. No, I really don't think so. Food stamps is the most efficient, it's the vastly most expanding social welfare program in the country. And that's just not me saying that. There's a new study out that talks about that. I'm reading straight from the story from the Washington Free Beacon that just came out today. The Washington Free Beacon says that food stamps is the most rapidly growing welfare program. And I said something on my social networks last night that I think might be controversial, but it's something worth listening to, and that is, what's it going to be like if the government all of a sudden shut down the food stamp program? We saw a few hours of the food stamp electronic system being down, and there were huge, huge mob scenes, and it was damn near a riot at some of these grocery stores with people getting grocery baskets full of stuff that they know they didn't have the money for. They know that their government program didn't even have the money in it for it, but they were filling up these bas cards. 47 million people participate in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program called SNAP, you know, old SNAP, in fact, old SNAP, commonly known as food stamps. And the costs have increased over 358% in the last 13 years. The increase in recent years cannot be attributed to the economic recession, according to Michael Tanner, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, but lacks eligibility requirements and an aggressive campaign by government to boost their roles. They run commercials trying to get you to take food stamps. You don't think this is the biggest example of prostitution there is? They run commercials with your money explaining why has-beens, hacks, washed-up nobodies should get on the food stamp program to get more of your money. And then they campaign for re-election and say, look at all of your money that we gave away. No wonder people like Paul are telling us that there's got to be another way. No wonder people are tired of voting. Spending on advertising and outreach for food stamps by federal and state governments has increased to $41.3 million a year. Let me say this again in a different way. State governments combined with the federal government spend $41,300,000 a year on advertising and outreach for food stamps. That's not the program. That's the freaking advertising for the program. States like Florida have hired food stamp recruiters. I'm not making this up. I know this sounds like it's coming from The Onion. I swear to you, this is a legitimate story. I'm reading this from the Washington Free Beacon. If you want to go look at freebeacon.com, you'll find what I'm talking about. Once again, states like Florida have hired food stamp recruiters who have a quota of signing up 150 new recipients a month. How would you like that to be your job? You're paid by the government, and your job is to find, we know these guys don't work weekends. I'm assuming this is a five-day-a-week job. So let's assume they're working 20 days a month. It's your job to find between 7 and 8 people a day and get them to sign up for food stamps. That's a freaking government job. The state of Rhode Island hosts food stamp-themed bingo games. And the USDA tells its field offices to throw food stamp parties in an effort to get more people on the rolls. You see, poor people getting government help, and people will think that that's better than greedy corporations getting the money. But poor people, working poor people, getting other people's tax money because greedy corporations and wealthy families like the Waltons pay these rollback wages so then the government programs can be drained out. It's all by design. I'll tell you what has contributed more to the increase in food stamps than their publicity and their PR, and that is that more Americans are out of work. And they're having to work more part-time jobs. And the cost of everything has gone up along with it. Gasoline prices, rent prices, mortgage prices are all up compared to what they were just in the year 2000. And they blow away the amount of household income increases. Now, one might say people who would never have taken food stamps before 2008 and were used to scraping by, even though they qualified, were forced to either see their family suffer or get the assistance. Again, when your choice is be independent and maybe starve or feed yourself by depending on the government, it becomes an easy choice for a lot of people. It truly makes you a slave if you let it. Again, the left-wingers, if we want to play that left-right paradigm, and I'll go along with it for this moment, this example, the left-wingers are correct when they say that food stamp benefits are very small and they only average $4.50 a day, but yet we're told that people can't survive without them. There's something really, really wrong, folks, in your society if people cannot survive without getting $4.50 from the government every day. Let me tell you, there's something really, really wrong in your country if people cannot survive without getting $5 from the government. Think about it.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
We're coming down the stretch to the end of the program tonight, folks, and I'm just kind of going through the mailbag and looking at some of the stuff that we've gotten in the inbox here. And I've always been told, and I always forget to say this, so I will say this now before I let it slip by again. You can always write to us at MrTruth247@yahoo.com, MRTRUTH247 247@yahoo.com, or out there on the Twitter, we are @MrTruth247, @MRTRUTH247. And we were talking earlier, and I was talking to Paul of Stop Invisible Taxes, about all the government positions that are going to be on the ballot just here in Kentucky next year. Now, this is our rare off year, if you will, when we don't have contested elections of any kind in Kentucky. And some people like that. I kind of like that because we get a year reprieval from all the campaign ads. And I'm not going to sit there and blow smoke up your ass and tell you how next year is the biggest election in the history of the world ever, because that's what they always tell you. I get sick of liberals and neocons telling us how every election year, I've been hearing for 20 years, is the most important one ever. The reason it's important is around here, there are so many offices that are going to be up for election again. All 435 U.S. House seats are to be renewed or canceled next year. I wish they got more opponents. Unfortunately, we know however many 80 to 97% of the incumbents keep getting reelected. I wish they didn't, but all six will be up for reelection in Kentucky. I can think of a couple who are doing a really good job. The only one I can think of in Kentucky who is doing a really good job is Thomas Massie. So obviously I want him to stay around. I definitely want him to get support. But even beyond that, we know that one-third of the U.S. Senate seats are up for election next year, including Addison Mitchell McConnell Jr., Mr. Dealmaker, Mr. Rump Shaker, Mitch McConnell. What's the difference when you vote for him than voting for another weasel in the Democrat Party? My good late great friend Mike Moreland was a magistrate up in northern Kentucky, and Mike Moreland always called Mitch McConnell the weasel. And my early impressions of politics going back 20 years were Mike Moreland calling McConnell the weasel. And he is a weasel. How else do you explain these deals? But he's up for re-election next year, along with one-third of all the U.S. senators. Here in Kentucky, we know that all 100 House seats are going to be up. We also know that half the state Senate seats are going to be up in Kentucky. We know the Jefferson County Judge Executive, Attorney, Clerk, Sheriff, Property Value Administrator, Coroner, Surveyor, all magistrates and constables, they're all up next year. Half of the Soil Water Supervisors, the Louisville Mayor, half of the Metro Council. I really hope that our good friend, Mr. Ed Martin, who you hear on these airwaves on Monday nights and Tuesday nights with Ed Springsteen, I really hope Ed Martin runs for Metro Council like he had teased doing. We know that the county party has chosen somebody to run, somebody who's been in government for 20 years and now is going to have a chance to run for local office rather than state office. We talk about the courts on this show a lot, the people in the black moo-moos, the boys and girls who stood up there on high and tell you to bow to them. But guess what, folks? All divisions of Jefferson County Circuit Court, Jefferson County Family Court, and District Court are all up for election next year. And also two Jefferson County Court of Appeals positions and one of the Kentucky Supreme Court seats. All of those will be up for election next year. And the really, really sad thing is the deadline to run for those offices is only about 3 months away. So I really, really encourage you to go over to the Secretary of State's office or the State Board of Election office and look at the requirements to run for these offices. We're not going to tell you to run for office as a Republican. We're not going to tell you to run as a Democrat. We don't care if you run third party. You won't know that we are all for supporting third parties here. But we got to get more people out there who think like us to be the elected officials. It would be really easy if Paul and I and the rest of the hundreds and thousands of listeners here that come in here every week and listen. We appreciate you. Excuse me. We really, really, really would like it if more people like us would get an elected office, because if we stop voting, there are other SOBs out there who are going to keep voting. Just because we stop doesn't mean that they're going to stop. So we've got to get more people in there like Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and Thomas Massey and Justin Amash and Tom McClintock. We've got to get more people in there like those guys. The bottom line is these people don't give you your liberties and freedoms. Those were naturally given to you, but a lot of them do want to take those freedoms away from you. The bottom line is you got to start looking out for these elections. I know some of you hate elections, and hey, I hate politics, but I don't hate elections because that is the only thing left within the system to fight the bastards. And that's what I'm asking you all to do. I'm asking you to get together with me, if it be in civil disobedience, if it be in withdrawing from some of the political systems that we're stuck in, you feel like you have a noose around your neck, if it be holding signs, signing petitions, going to marches, sitting in on offices, writing elected officials, calling in shows like this, getting your own show like this. Remember, we are here 5 days a week on the My View Matters radio network, Sunday night through Thursday night. Sunday night, you have our good friend Ken Moman with Liberty Unbridled. Ken is the former and now once again chairman of the State Libertarian Party. Mondays and Tuesday nights, you have the aforementioned Ed Martin and Ed Springsteen, and then I come back in here on Wednesday nights with Ed Martin, or I'm sorry, with Ed Springsteen, and I come back here on Thursday night to do our own show. Folks, remember, they want you to be dependent upon the government. This is all by design. You can be solid middle class, you can be wealthy, you can be dirt poor, but they want you to be slaves to their system. They want you to not control your expenses, they want you to not be cautious. They want you to depend on them for everything. And when they withdraw it from you, you'll have absolutely nothing, because that's what's going to happen. A government big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take it away. Keep that in mind, folks. Have a good week.
Well, they're here. I locked the door, but I can see them through the window. One of them is waving at me to shut down. I'm giving him the finger. I'll shut down when I'm goddamn good and ready.
Yeah.
I'm entitled?
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.